The following podcast is part of the MindBodySpirit.fm podcast network. Meditation doesn't have to be a solo practice. Meditation is more fun with friends. Looking for a way to drop in and hang out at the same time? Join us online at Omega Institute for a meditation party with self-proclaimed meditation nerds Dan Harris, host of the 10% Happier podcast, Sebene Selassie, and Jeff Warren. This three-day retreat will stream live from Omega's Hudson Valley campus May 17th to 19th. Don't miss the party. Reserve your spot at eomega.org/party today.
What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
What does it mean to be present? To try and stay in the moment that you're in and not worry about the future or regret the past? It's something I've been trying to do for a long time. I'm Diane Ray, and I have always had questions about the big picture. God, life after death, spirituality, metaphysics, and what drives people to do what they do. And I like to ask them about it and learn from it. If you're a seeker like me, I hope you join me for some of these conversations on the podcast and be present with me in this moment. Hello and welcome to the conversation today. Doing this podcast, I'm often presented with books by various publicists so that the authors can be a guest on the show. This happens all the time. When one publicist that I work with regularly, her name's Eileen, told me about the book Encounters with Living Language, Surrendering to the Power of Words by Christina Donnell, I wasn't quite sure what to expect, but I was intrigued by the subtitle, Surrendering to the Power of Words, on a couple of different levels, because I'm a big reader. I mean, ask anybody who has known me since childhood. You could never pull a book out of my hands. I read everything, shampoo bottles, you know, ingredients on things. I'm always reading something. So over the years, I've been struck by different combinations of words, you know, in print as well as audio. I mean, I was a rock DJ back in the day, you know, songs are a powerful collection of words. So as I was looking at the book, it kind of got me thinking of what, you know, what does that really mean? You know, the power of words. And I'm a communicator in my career, I guess you could say, and my background in radio, which is an audible medium. So I personally try to use words in the most effective way to various degrees of success sometimes. But I was interested in this whole concept. So I was curious to hear Christina's take on the power of language. So I'm happy to bring her on today. Christina is a clinical psychologist, a spiritual teacher, and she's also the director of the Winds of Change Association, a Minneapolis-based educational organization, and they're dedicated to offering programs that help humankind's evolving consciousness, which is pretty interesting. So you want to check that out. You can find out more about her and the organization at Christina Donnell, that's Donnell.com. If you want to see what that's about. So I want to welcome Christina to the show. Thanks for having a conversation with me today.
Thank you, Diane. And more importantly, thank you for this new forum, Mind, Body, Spirit, that you are instrumental in placing in the world. We are dear sisters in sowing seeds of consciousness. And so thank you, thank you, thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
That you are doing.
Well, that's great, because I don't think of myself in that role of a sower of the seeds of consciousness.
But yeah, because you're rock and roll girl.
That's right. I am an old rock DJ at heart, but I will accept that. Thank you. That's very cool. And yeah, we are definitely trying to present, you know, different ideas and thoughts on everything from spirituality, health and wellness, a lot of different things on mindbodyspirit.fm podcast network. And that's why I think it's cool to have you on, and we can talk about your book and your work, because this is something a little bit different. And when, like I said in the beginning, when Eileen first kind of pitched me the idea, she says, oh, you have to talk to Christina. I'm like, well, what does this mean? You know, encounters with living language. And then as I spent some time with it and I sat with it and I was reading the book, I'm like, okay, now it's starting to make sense. So just so people can understand, your book is it's an interesting collection of stories that was described in the press release here as Eat, Pray, Love meets Carlos Castaneda, which is a really interesting description of a book. So coming from you, coming from the creator, how would you describe the book to people? Because I'd like people to pick it up who may see it and be like, what is this?
Yeah. Yes. And thank you, Diane. And you were not the first interviewer who has given pause and said, wow, I don't even know how to do this interview, because this book and this message, let's just be clear, might be one standard deviation out or two standard deviation out from where our consensual reality is at.
Right. It's something totally different. And I had not really thought of language and words in that way and in the way that it's described in the book. So how would you describe the term living language?
Yes. Living language, encounters with living language. And this is what I would say. For centuries, we have used language to represent. We can be in the written word or the spoken word, and our conceptual mind just reduces the information, and it remains in the mind. And what I would say, given my experiences through illuminations, is that living language is when, well, we've all experienced it, when you read or the spoken word raises the hair on your neck, or when you get full body chills in the sensory system of the body. That is living language. When living language is no longer just conceptualizes meaning from the mind, it is received deeper into the body, where I sometimes say trap doors open, and we have the experience of the inert word, representation, inert word, that becomes alive. And my book is about this, and that when it becomes alive, it expands awareness. And not only does it expand awareness, it expands awareness to the place where you can be in the felt sense of the oneness behind all that is underlying life. And the book talks about that experience, of which I had over the last 10 years, which is why I'm here to be the mouthpiece for it. Because people who voyage in consciousness are always, their spiritual practices are always about expanding awareness, enlightenment, expanding awareness, awakening, and meditation. And this book will demonstrate that, oh my goodness, the word, the written and spoken word, can bring us to that same state, which is what tells me it's in its own evolution, just like everything else is in its own evolution. It is here with this book. There's a time for certain ideas to arrive, and this would be one of them, where we get back to, in the beginning was the word. In the beginning, actually, I would say in the beginning was silence, and then there was the word.
Right. That's so fascinating, because I'm all about it, trying to expand my own awareness and consciousness. And if I can get there through a series of words, through a practice. But I understand what you're saying, because I'm sure everybody can think back to reading a piece of poetry or, a piece of a book or even a song lyric or something that touched you in such a way to either, bring you to tears, or something that you felt emotionally. And maybe it's something that's innately in our DNA as humans. Like when you talked about in the beginning, there was the word, and you mentioned later on in the book, the word, holy word. And I was familiar with that because I worked with Greg Braden when I worked during my Hay House days. And Greg did an amazing project called the God Code Sound with Jonathan Goldman. They also called it the Divine Name. So there is a specific word that can bring us to that place, right? That place of awareness, and to raise our consciousness, like you're talking about. So I kind of skipped ahead a little bit because you did mention the word, and the beginning was the word. So maybe we can circle back a little bit about that, because I want to get back to what you had mentioned a minute or so ago about in the book, what you describe as transmissions that were kind of sparked by language, right? So, in that, and I hope I'm explaining this right, and then I want you to explain it if I'm not. So in the transmission, it was actually, this was like almost like a channeling or receiving of information and experience that you had as a result of words coming to you or reading something, or how did those transmissions take place?
Yes. You know, maybe we give a little historical background here. I have been a transcendent dreamer, lucid dreamer, my entire life. So I've had experiences, but in dreaming, of course, you are asleep, where the lucidity increases, you awaken in the dream, your consciousness expands, and latent capabilities for humanity arise from that place. I've had that my entire life. What I never experienced until 2012, after a near-death experience, was this kind of transmission coming while awake, not asleep, but while awake. And, you know, the book reveals maybe 12 of the 92 illuminations I had occasioned by the spoken or the written word, where it comes from an outside source. It comes when you are not expecting it. It increases your lucidity. The conceptual mind recedes. The somatic sensory system of the body, all of your senses are absorbing. And I said, like, it was like conceptual templates of the ear, sound, body, open interior trap doors that led to a different quality of awareness and structure of awareness, where everything became a unified whole. And in the 92 illuminations I had from 2012 to 2015, all from an outside source, unexpected, it's not like you want them to come, they just simply come, seemed to have a governing aim. They seem to have a governing aim of, what do I say, training my awareness and my conceptual mind to recede, just like music, where you receive the music, and there's a place with music where you are no longer separate from it. You are the music. And this is what happened with language. And with it came this beautiful blooming of oneness with all that underlies the whole. We can call it unity consciousness, we can call it non-dual awareness, but it came from the written and the spoken word.
That's incredible. And you mentioned that this was precipitated by a near-death experience that you had, that you describe in the book, of overcoming yellow fever,
which
was really serious. And this was in the Andes. So you lived and studied in the Andes for almost 20 years. That's a pretty incredible experience. And you lived with is it Caro's people? Is that how
The Caro. The Caro.
Caro, okay. Can you tell us a little bit about that experience? That must have been pretty amazing.
I've actually been with the Caro Indians of the high Andes, okay, 18 to 22,000 feet. You know, you can say them, people are like, okay, whatever. But guess what? Base camp for Mount Everest is 14,000 feet. They live at 18 to 22,000 feet. And they are very unique Indigenous people. And I've actually spent 30 years. I didn't live per se, but I had a lover there and I had a godchild there. And it was an extraordinary experience because as an Indigenous peoples who I think are a prototype of consciousness on the world, really, they live above the tree line. Nothing grows except potatoes there. They live off of potatoes and herding alpaca. But they also, they don't live in linear time. They don't know past, present, and future. They also don't live with what I call a me cosmology. An I, you know, like a reference of the world around an I. They live from a place of a we. And between that we cosmology and not living in past, present, or future, you can be with a carol. They will never talk about what happened in the past or what's going to be in the future. They are so be present, right,
Diane, or in the now.
Be present in this moment. And that the simultaneity of that full presence with let's just be real, 18 to 22,000 feet, that's a meditative experience every day of your life. So they are very unique. And I had the privilege of spending a lot of time in this consciousness, which I do think set up what these language transmissions brought forth from a near-death experience, which actually happened in the Andes. And I happened to be there because my lover had died from a lightning strike 3 months prior. And my godson, I was concerned about his parental rights. So I had gone there and I received, of which 50% die. And if, you know, it's, you either recover from the first round or the second round, you really struggle. And I didn't recover from the first round. The second, I was deeply struggling with a temperature of 106 at 18,000 feet. And I had my near-death experience. I was definitely ready to leave the planet. It was so painful. I was so out of my body that I reached that place of which I talk about my first book, Transcend Dreaming, because I actually help people in medical centers with loved ones on life support who are trying to make decisions, that I can be in those places, that threshold between life and death. So I know, I knew it well. I knew it well, but I never experienced it. And I experienced it in the Andes. And long story short, they're so ready to leave. So ready. It's so intoxicating. That threshold is intoxicating. So ready to leave. And I hear audio sent in. I hear, I'm the living word behind language. You are to return and be the mouthpiece for language. I had no idea what that meant. That meant nothing to me. And then I came tumbling, crashing back down, and it took another 6, 7, 8, 9 days to actually be able to take sustenance and ride horseback off the mountain and get back to the United States. And even in that moment, I was like, I don't even understand what that directive was in that moment. However, I should have known because I had 8 years of absolutely being obsessed with genius writers, Shelley and Blake and Rilke and Bachelard and Valerie, and how they could wield language in a way that it would absolutely move my consciousness.
that's just an incredible experience. I can't even imagine going through something like that. I mean, personally, I would love to be able to receive those kinds of transmissions without the near-death experience.
Yes, me too. Me too.
So if there's a way to do that, let me know. The stories of your time there in the Andes, you weave into the book, and you share a lot of your life there. And like you just mentioned, you did experience major loss of people that you loved. And I was just curious about you said that the Kara people are ready to leave. I mean, they must have such a different perception and understanding of life and death as opposed to how we handle it here in the West.
Yes, yes, yes. They believe they are organs of the earth, meaning they are extensions of the earth. They're the extensions of the larger continuum. And so they see the clouds and the mountains and the earth herself in the face of their children. My godson said to me once, "I hear the potatoes growing today."
That's something you don't hear.
Right. We don't hear it anymore. We don't hear it here because we conceptualize and then move on and we do sound bites. But they live in that larger rhythm of the continuum. And I do believe it's all my years there that near-death experience that brought me to writing this book.
So after you received these transmissions and you were guided to be a, mouthpiece of language, I think it's so interesting that you're here now in this time and place when you look around and you see how, first of all, the power of language is undeniable. I mean, we see how stories are told, falsehoods, how people are swayed to believe a certain thing because of the power of language, of what they're told, disseminated through books, the media, whatever. So I think there is a power, like a sword that needs to be wielded carefully, right?
Yes.
I mean, do you feel that you're here to kind of sound the alarm for that we should be a little more aware of the power of language?
Diane, thank you. I actually have never thought of this before. You are the first person to bring this up, because my message has been language is in its own evolution, and might we as humans be failing language right now? May we be failing it because it has more to offer, because my experience has shown me it has much more to offer. So I like this, consensual reality, how we, the non-truths, the truths, how we sit with that. And yet I am like a standard deviation out saying, what if you let your mind recede with a spoken or written word and bring it into the body and feel its truth and feel how it can expand your own awareness?
So I wanted, on that note, I wanted to ask you about the power of sacred language. I mean, I've personally experienced being in a group like a kirtan, right?
Yes.
Where you're chanting.
Yes.
And even though I don't really know exactly what I may be saying, sometimes you do if there's an explanation of the particular chant, right? But it's undeniable the power you feel in saying those words and sounds with a group. And then if you think of other examples, like even going back to, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, the sounds, dee, 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 and how that connected people. So I think that's interesting to explore. I mean, what do you think about that? So old and primal, right? Those sounds, how sacred language, some of those sounds and words were from, the Upanishads, like back in,
yes.
back in the day.
Yes. And in group where that sound is a surround sound, it allows a different experience. And what I would say is, and I do talk about this in the book, it was really helpful for me that a good friend of mine that I had a conversation with sent an audio, like a 1 minute, 19 second audio of Maharishi talking about the power of the word. You know, so Maharishi, you know, was the pioneer of the transcendental
meditation.
Right?
Right.
Yeah. That's not where I come from. So, but he was that. And that 1 minute 19 confirmed the experience I've been having with these illuminations, where he said, yes, any word, and even somebody from the audience said, do you mean Sanskrit? Or do you mean any language, like even English? And he's like, any word. You can have the knowledge and the meaning of the word, but if you don't have the experience of the word, then you have not received fully the word, and it will only be inert and will not be alive until you have the experience of the word. And when you have the experience of the word, it leads to the unbounded awareness, and that the meaning of the word will never take you there. That was very significant for me.
Wow. Yeah, that's pretty incredible to think about. I mean, since, are you still having these transmissions?
I do, but thank goodness they're not so, you know, I mean, you can see in the book, they're riveting, and I hang on by my fingernails, because these transmissions, for whatever reason, blocked my conceptual mind, blocked that I could make meaning. They went deep into the experience, opened trap doors, which then expanded awareness. And it was only when I could retrieve making meaning or rationalizing, they would stop, which also tells me this is the evolution of the word. But yes, I now still have that, and I have the ability to not react so strongly to that my conceptual mind hasn't gone offline.
Okay. So you have a little more control over the experience.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, they happen in my consultations all the time, which is really beautiful, because as Rilke would say, there are 1,000 roots under every word, and in those words are the archetypal forces, unseen, yes, but forces that are behind those words. And so holy power of the word is when you can receive that, it enters the room. It enters the room and it changes the exchange you're having.
And the holy power of the word, when you're talking about that, it made me think of the story of the Tower of Babel, you know, the biblical explanation of multiple languages, and that, if I get the story right, God was concerned that humans had blasphemed by building the tower, you know, close to God. So he brought down the tower, and the people that were working on it all started talking different languages. They were divided into different groups so that they couldn't understand each other to build the tower back up again. Is that kind of the story?
I don't know. It's beautiful, though. I like it. Now it's my story.
Well, I looked it up before we talked because I wanted to get the story right, because I remember seeing it. I was watching, I forget, it was some kind of biblical story or the stories of the Bible or something on TV. I don't know. But they did a dramatization of the Tower of Babel, and God strikes the tower down. He didn't want them to build it so high. And then all of the people that were working on it were divided into different groups so that they couldn't understand each other to build back up the tower again, to be too close. I mean, I'm probably getting the story twisted a little bit, but there's a lot of that kind of stuff in the Old Testament, you know, a lot of retribution and, you know, Hellfire, yes. Brimstone, and things like that. But I think the interesting thing I kind of gleaned from it was that even though people were understanding different words, it could be powerful to them. You know, even though they may not understand the other person's words.
Yes. And
if that makes any sense.
And not knowing the story.
We'll have to look it up. I'll do my Bible study or look up after this. But it's something like that. The humans were divided into different groups so they couldn't understand each other. I don't know. Let me think of the lesson beyond that. But anyway, it's just an interesting story, I guess, about the power of language, right? So if they couldn't understand each other, God wins because they couldn't build the tower up to be too close to him.
I would say this. Oh, wow. I can go in so many directions. So many. If I'm sitting with 30 students, you know, longtime students, spiritual students, voyaging in consciousness, and I drop one sentence like, I am the light behind you. I drop that slowly into a vat of wine with 30 people. And I repeat it, and I repeat it again. And then I do a surround, kind of like chanting. All 30 students experience expanded awareness and consciousness because the words themselves are being experienced. They're not being represented in the mind. They're being experienced. And when the word is experienced, the struts and fibers fall away. And this is the fascinating thing about language, the word. Then it starts connecting to the unseen and the forces underlying the word themselves. And people have that experience, and then the group becomes multiplied, and there's a whole other experience.
Right.
And so I say in the book, you know, Gandhi is a great example. Gandhi sat in prayer for India from a place of nonviolence, and the violence would stop through that language and word. That is the holy power of word. The Karo Indians call in lightning strikes and thunder as part of ceremony, not from a place of power, but from a place of dominion that you are a part of us and we want you in this exchange, right? Because language is not only the word, it's also the sound that our beautiful, beautiful earth makes. The thunder, the lightning, the rain, the streams, the rivers, the birds. It's all sound of which, if we can come home to, and it's the whole point of the book, expands awareness, and you can be in the unified field.
Right. That's where I want to be, in the unified field. So this is such a fun conversation. I wanted to ask you quickly about, I worked for Hay House and a woman named Louise Hay, and she was the queen of positive affirmations.
Who doesn't know Louise Hay? Yes.
A lot of people, you'd be surprised, but probably most of the people that listen to this podcast or listen to the podcast on this network are definitely aware of Louise and her work. And the interesting thing, if you spent any time around Louise, she would call you on your words. You know, certain words combinations, you know, she didn't like. Like if you were in a meeting and she said, or if someone said, well, we can do this, it'll kill two birds with one stone. Well, why would you want to do that? You know?
Oh, it's beautiful. This is beautiful.
She would comment on it. Or if you said something like, oh, I'm dying to go there, she'd say, no, you're not dying to go there. Things like that. She was very aware of what you said and the power that you put on those certain words.
Oh,
so I just wondered what you felt about that. Do you think there's power in affirmations? And some people think they're silly and don't have any power.
There is power in every word we utter. The question is, when we utter it to another, are they in a place to receive it and understand its power? Or are they just surfing on the surface consciousness? And it's why I come back to, have we failed language? It has so much more to offer. So much more to offer. You know, Eckhart Tolle said, I can't remember, it was one of his first books, but he was like, A-E-I-O-U and all the consonants, how could that ever bring you to enlightenment? And I'm here to say, oh my goodness, A-E-I-O-U and all the consonants can absolutely bring you there, and it can bring you there faster than meditating for 20, 30 years. But you have to receive it. You have to have the experience. It's like a musician. It has to come into your body. It has to sing inside of you. You have to be present, right? You have to be present. But all your senses taking in the word without conceptualizing, which is what we've done for two centuries.
Right. I agree. I think we have been failing language. We've been failing a lot of things, I think, as a species that hopefully we're becoming more aware of.
And yes. Maybe we're all about sound bites and emojis right now.
OMG, right. That's so true. The book has really brought some great ideas to me, and I hope it'll spark conversation and debate with the readers. And I wanted to ask you, you were introduced to me as a mystic. Eileen said that you're a mystic. So what would you say to that? Would you agree? Do you feel that?
Well, I live in America. It's the 21st century. And who really wants to believe in a female mystic in the 21st century at a time where we're in a degradation? But what I will tell you is, from the day I was born, I definitely have a mystical temperament. I'm a psychologist, so I can hold that space while being rational. And the entire reason I've been on the earth is I am a womb for the unseen to move into the seen and into the manifest world. And it's why I'm doing this interview. It's why I always show up. And we can call that whatever we want to call that.
Okay. No, I like that. A womb for the unseen. That is very mystical. So I think that would put you in the mystical category.
Yeah.
I wouldn't put a lot of people in there, but I think it's a very cool title to have. So I'd like you to share if there's anything you'd like people to know about the book. I mean, you know, kind of as a wrap up, what would you say if someone sees the book on the shelf, wherever they are, or they're scrolling through Amazon, and this kind of strikes an interest? Who do you hope picks it up?
Well, I can say this, given the book has not been out that long, but the people most resonant with it are musicians, sound healers, people who understand the experience of the sensory body and bringing something in and letting it transport their awareness. And I would say this too about the readers. And this is true for my 30 years of being a spiritual teacher. Everyone will tell you, I cannot remember what I read or listened to if it were an audio, but my consciousness was transported. And when I went back to it again, it's like I never heard it before. And this book is in the same vein. And I can't explain that. I can't explain that. But it is the nature of, I think, the unseen moving into the manifest world and transporting consciousness. So I would say this book will transport consciousness.
Well, I definitely suggest people give it a read and at least open your mind to some of these ideas, because you definitely opened up mine. I thought that it's a very cool read, and your writing is beautiful, very poetic, and I think people are really going to enjoy it. The book is Encounters with Living Language, Surrendering to the Power of Words. And Christina, it's been so fun to have you on the podcast. And if people want to find out about you, definitely head to your website, ChristinaDonnell.com. And thanks so much for listening today to the show, all of you people out there, whoever finds me in podcast land. If you like what you heard, please leave a review. And if you haven't downloaded the free MindBodySpirit.fm mobile app, please make sure you do that in the App Store for Apple or Android. You can leave a message or comment for any of our podcasters on the open mic feature, so check that out. And make sure you check out all the wonderful podcasters we have on the MindBodySpirit.fm podcast network. And thank you so much, Christina.
Diane, thank you. Thank you. You are doing a beautiful service in the world.
Do you ever feel that calling that you should be doing more with your life? If you're unhappy with the status quo, I can help. My name is Elias Patras, and I'm an intuitive motivator, psychic medium, and motivational speaker. I know that feeling, and on my podcast, Your Inner Voice, I can help you answer that call to step into your life's purpose. I will show you how to recognize and listen to the signs and signals that are all around us, and help you tap into your intuition. Join me for the show here on the mindbodyspirit.fm podcast network and wherever you get your podcasts. Let's connect, educate, and grow on this journey together.